Hanselminutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 78, recorded live Friday, August 24th, 2007. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. Please make a tax-deductible donation to help fight diabetes at hanselman.com/fightdiabetes. In this episode, Scott talks about the 2007 Ultimate Tools List.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. Welcome to Hansel Minutes. And I'm here with Scott Hanselman. And, of course, we're talking today about Scott's 2000 Ultimate Developer and Power Users Tool List for Windows. How's it going, Scott?
It's going pretty well. We did the tools list again this year. I guess I just said we, me, huh? Me late at night, the royal we. And I've been doing this list since 2003. And when I update it, I do all of the updated entries and the new entries in red. So this is up at hanselman.com/tools. And it's getting, actually, it got so big that it broke FeedBurner last year.
Wow.
Because it's something like 500K when it turns into HTML. So it blew up. It didn't really blow up, but it basically overflowed how much they think that a normal RSS feed should be. So I had to open a ticket with them.
Hey, before we get into the tools, let's revisit last week's show.
Right. Last week's show is when we talked about moving life into the cloud.
Right. Moving into the cloud. And
you were going to explore live custom domains.
Right. You had set up a mail all your friends and family on Google Apps. Mm-hmm. And I said I was going to try Windows Live. So
right.
I did. I tried it. I was really, really impressed by the simplicity of the interface and the uncluttered nature of setting things up. It was very easy to do.
The administrative interface was very clean?
Yes, it was. Yeah. There was a couple of features missing that were deal breakers for me, but apparently they're coming soon, but I just couldn't wait. And the one was there isn't a good way to move existing emails up there.
Yeah, that's a problem with Google as well. I mean, you can if you pay the premium for the 10 gigs and you have an IMAP account, moving is no problem at all. But I had to actually purchase another $30 utility from a cool little company called Limit None that basically pushes all my mail up and then brings it all back down again. It was kind of a complicated experience. There's no reason that you shouldn't be able to upload a PST and have them open it up and stick it into the mail.
Yeah, that was my thought too, or at least a CSV file or something simple. But, okay, so that was one. And the other one, which was really more important to me, because, you know, third-party tools are third-party tools, and if I can get my email up there somehow, that's great. But the deal breaker was I couldn't forward an email to – I couldn't forward emails from one account to an account that wasn't a Hotmail account or an MSN account.
So you're saying if your mail is up at Live Custom Domains, you couldn't turn around and have it forwarded back outside?
That's right.
Probably to avoid spam, but definitely something that they need to do. That seems
probably,
like a real no-brainer.
I think you're right. I think it's a spam prevention measure because forwarding, having email addresses that can forward to other email addresses is the main cause of spam. I mean, that's the main tool that spammers use.
Well, you gave it a try.
Yeah, I gave it a try. And if I had more time, I could wait for that feature to come out, but I just don't have more time. So.
Sure. Well, we'll explore their stuff in a couple months and see how it goes.
Yep.
All right.
So on to the list.
So the list is, like I say, it's getting bigger and bigger this year. Everything is in red that has been added. Lots and lots of things, like literally dozens and dozens of links have been updated. It's amazing when you maintain a list that's this big, the amount of link rot. This thing, if you print it out, something like 20 pages now. And the number of links that rotted and people did not even bother to redirect was really disturbing. And I received at least 6 emails within the first few hours from people saying, well, you're linking to me and it looks like there's a page there, but that's really the old page. Would you link here? It would have been nice if everyone was using 301 redirects and I could have run a utility, which I did, to check all of the links and then report which one has been updated. So I could have watched for 301 and 302 redirects and had the list automatically update itself. But instead, I get email from people saying, you're pointing to the wrong place, please point here. Which is fine, but I just thought that was an interesting little aspect of the web. This is a list I update every year, usually in July or August, and the links rot, and I have no way to automatically update them. It's kind of
I think that people, many people who put up websites still don't think of them as sites that are going to be, they think of it only as sites that are going to be read by eyes and not by, you know, links or...
Yeah. Well, there's also a sense of impermanence, but, you know, I'm looking at my archives here and I started in April of 2002. 5 years in the scope of things is very, very short, but at least all the links still work.
Okay.
And even the links to my old radio weblog work. Anyway. All right. So in the first category here, we've got Big Ten life and work changing utilities. And these are just, kind of my top 10 favorite. I always come to these utilities and these did not change that much this year. When something is pretty awesome, it's not likely to change. But I did have 2 additions. The first was e-text editor. I just can't seem to decide between Notepad 2, Notepad++, and e. But e is the addition to the list at the top there. And it is just a really amazing... basically, they call it TextMate for Windows. TextMate's a really famous application on them on the Mac that a lot of the Rails guys have used. And it basically plugs in Cygwin. You know, Cygwin is that Linux-like environment for Windows and lets you build what are called bundles. So then rather than just having syntax highlighting where you've got colors for a particular file type, you've got bundles of information that are macros, little programs, little insert expansions that are specific to that file type. So there's like the HTML bundle, but then there's the HTML blogging bundle and the XHTML bundle. And these all include custom commands just specific to that particular thing. And the bundles use Cygwin. So you can write these bundles yourself by shelling out into Python or shelling out into a bash shell and modify your world. So if someone wanted to make a PowerShell bundle and make e-text editor that much more friendly, they could. It's very, very
One
cool
thing that's editor. Missing from the e-text editor web page is a real screenshot.
Yeah, the eText editor web page has a bunch of screencasts, but I do like to see a screenshot as soon as I hit a page. I want to see a screenshot or a big button that says click here for the gallery. It's
right.
Funny how many places you'll visit and you'll hunt for a screenshot, and I really should see that first screenshot right off the bat. Part of the impatience of the internet. PowerShell's still on the list, but a couple of really cool things have happened in PowerShell this year. One that is really of note, I thought, was called PowerTab by the PowerShell guy at thepowershellguy.com. And you've seen like ANSI art. Remember when we had at the command line, we would draw boxes and you'd have windowing environments like TurboVision in Borland TurboVision. And they would build these windowing environments just using ANSI art. He has basically made tab completion at the command line as a script using ANSI art-like construct so that you can start typing in PowerShell, hit tab, and then rather than getting the classic tab completion that we're used to seeing in DOS at cmd.exe, we'll see an actual ANSI art pop up, and he'll automatically reflect over all of the .NET framework assemblies that are in the current app domain, build up a little database, all of the WMI classes, and makes a really fast and easy way to start using PowerShell. It's really very amazing. Another thing is the PowerShell community extensions. This is a really great thing about CodePlex is that right now it seems like when a Microsoft product comes out, if it has an extensibility point and someone doesn't like some aspect of it, minutes later the whatever community extensions version goes up with, you know, a couple of dozen commands that didn't make it into V1. So then people will build these extensions for them. And this one includes all sorts of cool commandlets and functions that are things like outspeech. So you could be at command line on PowerShell, pipe something out to out-speech, and it would talk it to you. Things like that. Just all sorts of cool things you didn't know you needed. And then the other big thing on the Big Ten list this year was was Firebug. Firebug is really an in-browser IDE for JavaScript, Ajax, CSS, HTML debugging.
Wow.
It is truly amazing. If you haven't used this thing, you really need to check it out. It's a complete debugger that lives and is installed in Firefox as an extension. And it has its own extension techniques as well. So you can extend Firefox with Firebug, but then Firebug can have its own extensions as well.
Now, I'm curious as to why you didn't put this in the developer category.
I did, actually. That's funny that you mentioned that. When something is so incredibly awesome on the list, I put it 2 and 3 times.
Oh.
So if you find something more than one place, that means that it's so intensely awesome, you must get it immediately.
okay.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so it's down there too. Firebug includes things like profiling of your JavaScript, so like, you know, just your performance and finding JavaScript bottlenecks. It also lets you execute JavaScript on the fly, kind of like the immediate window in Visual Studio, as well as a full JavaScript logging thing. So as much as I despise JavaScript, just because I'm not very good at it, I don't like playing with it because it just seems so loosey-goosey. Having an IDE like this alongside of Visual Studio 2008 is just really clean. So if the Visual Studio 2008 script debugger doesn't do what I want to do, I'll flip over to Firebug and I can see all sorts of information. And then there's a thing called YSlow. Have you heard about YSlow? This is from Yahoo's Performance Labs.
No, I haven't.
This is pretty slick. There's a whole thing going on the net right now about YSlow, where people are running this tool, runs inside of Firebug, against their websites, and it basically applies kind of 13 commandments that Yahoo has come up with for performant websites. Things like, we have found in our experience at Yahoo that some number, is the maximum number of JavaScript you should have on a page. Any more can really, you know, cause you performance problems. Or do you have HTTP compression turned on? 13 different kind of commandments. You run it, and then it gives you an A through an F for each of these 13, and then gives your site an A through an F overall. I got like a D. All sorts of things were wrong. Now,
wow.
Not all of the things that Yahoo says are gold, because some of the suggestions, like the second one it makes, is use a content distribution network. I don't think every blog is going to use Akamai to, you know, host their images geosynchronously located, you know, whatever.
Right.
You know, geo load balanced, rather. But for the most part, it shows not only what you can do with Firebug as an extension, but it also gives us an insight into what makes Yahoo's stuff so fast.
Okay. So I see that YSlow is in the developer category under Firebug. There's a whole bunch of other things here. New things in the developer's life.
Yeah, you know, there's so much stuff going on in the developer's world. I don't want to make this list just a brain dump in the sense of here's a bunch of stuff. I really try to put up things that I not only use, but I use, you know, every week at the minimum. Things that I really are tools that are a part of my life. I mean, anyone could just put up a big giant list of tools that's just a bunch of stuff out there.
Right.
But I really wanted to express that these are the things I use regularly. And in the situation on the list where I have an item and then two other items that are like indented, like for example, I've got WinMerge, which is the diff tool I've been using for years. But I've also got kind of an inner conflict going on because SourceGear released DiffMerge. It's a free merge tool. And they released it because they thought that they could make the world's greatest merge tool. And then KDiff3. These are three different diff tools that I honestly and truly go between. I hop back and forth between these. And I'm kind of having a little, you know, inner turmoil to try to decide which one of these I want to stick with. I would use, now people always bring up Beyond Compare from Scooter Software. And
yeah.
It totally is awesome. But I haven't paid for it. So these are the free versions that I should probably put Beyond Compare up there. Because if you want to buy a diff tool, it is the bomb. So yeah, I should probably update that.
Okay.
Telerik, the Telerik code converter, and then Carlos AG's code translator. These are two sites that are really great for converting C# to VB. So if you have to write a sample for an article and the editor says, well, I want the sample in both C# and VB, these are really great online tools to do that. The Telerik one is a little smarter than Carlos's, but Carlos's does AJAX, so I can just type and it'll automatically do it. So I kind of bounce back and forth between those two. Those are very cool. Then under like XML stuff, doing developer stuff in XML, Sketchpath is pretty cool. Sketchpath.com. Do you remember Don XML's XPath Mania?
Yeah. We talked about it on DNRTV. Showed it.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, but it does even more. It lets you support basically, it has libraries of expressions like data for common stuff like data tables or OpenXML, and it's pretty kind of on steroids. XPath Mania is nice and integrates into Visual Studio, while Sketchpath is kind of a world of its own. Reminds me of Roy Oshirov's Regulator. Hmm. Remember the Regulator for regular expressions? It's like that, but it's for XPath. It's in beta, but it's crazy. It's pretty hardcore. And XPath can be pretty intense.
I've been talking to Don XML about XML for link, or link for XML, I guess.
Yeah,
it's called.
I'm working on an XML chapter of a book right now, and I'm doing the XML for link stuff right now.
Yeah, and that seems to be almost a direct replacement for XPath.
I wouldn't say, by saying it's a replacement, that implies that it was intended to replace, but it definitely could replace.
Within the bounds of normalcy, I mean, when I say that, I mean that it does the same thing. You can do queries with link for XML.
Just totally.
Yeah.
Just like you could with XQuery, of course, we know that got dropped.
Yep.
There's next week's show. Let's do it. Let's do XML, XQuery, XML for link, or link for XML.
That sounds good.
All right, we'll do it. Oh, yeah, speaking of regular expressions, David Suryangi's got a AJAX-based regex tester. So this is, I like these little AJAX applications, like a little regex tester that lets me type in a regular expression, then as I'm typing, it's going and updating all the different things, like the matches and replacements, the match groups. It's kind of an online version of Chris Sell's regex designer. And then a less .NET focused but really excellent one is called RexV, and that's at rexv.org, and it's more focused on PHP, but it is a really, really thoughtfully laid out regex expression editor online, and I use both of both David Suryangi's and then RegV, or I think it's actually called RexV. Of course, the launchers, I don't know which launcher you use, but the launchers fight in my brain keeps getting worse and worse. I still use SlickRun. I just can't seem to get SlickRun is the little floating text box.
Right.
And I use it for launching almost all my applications. But, I put three new ones up this year that are kind of taunting me. Humanized Enso, E-N-S-O. Is a really, really strange application written in Python, but it is so, if an application could be called peaceful, it has no UI, you push down the caps lock key, and this big translucent gray square kind of pops up in the corner of the screen, and you start typing in this giant font, and you type in things like open calc, and then let go of the caps lock key. So it's up only while you're holding caps lock. So you hold caps lock, you type, and then you let go. And it is the letting go.
So you lose your left pinky in the process.
Well, you do, but surprisingly, it works. And the interesting thing about this application is it's completely modeless. It has no modal dialogues of any kind. You're only interfacing with this modeless kind of gray square. So you might be typing an email, and you might want to do some math, some quick calculation to insert a number into your email. So you can say, hey, Carl, pi is 22 over 7. You type in 22-7. You select it. Then you hit caps lock, type calculate, and then let go. And then it takes that text that is in the selected current application and replaces it with the actual value.
Nice.
Stuff like that, just kind of trying to think for you. Another one I added was dash command at try-.com. And the dash command is a really interesting one. It is also trying to be focused on what the current application is doing. So it's thoughtful about which application is currently the one in front. And it will, like if you type email and start typing, it will pop the email up and then insert what you just typed into the email. So a lot of these applications are just launchers, some of the newer ones and a lot of the older ones that are trying to update themselves to get the crown of greatest launcher are interacting more with Explorer. Mm. Like you might click on a folder, hit the launch button, the quick dash button, type zip, and then let go. And that folder that you had currently selected would then get zipped up. The other one that I added was...
You don't run all of these simultaneously, do you?
I do actually run four or five at a time. Because I'm really trying to pick one that's really going to do... And I'm actually a funny... I'm interacting with most of these different folks, these different launcher guys. They know that I'm intense about launchers. So when I have questions, thoughts, things that I want to make better, I will go back and forth with them and say, you know, I really wish you would add this particular command.
Well, you're using Vista, right?
I am using Vista, yeah.
Why not use voice commands?
Well, that's funny that you say that. So I'm using voice commands a lot lately, but I'm finding that the little, even on this quad proc machine, the little half second pause as I wait for the voice command to be recognized is irritating. I mean this like sincerely irritating. If I say open Notepad and then it opens, that was very irritating.
Right.
But if I just go and say window R, bring up, you know, slick run type N and hit enter. Or if I use like auto hotkey and just hit window N and brought up Notepad directly, you know, you just can't compete with the voice stuff. It's got to anticipate a little bit better. And then the last one that I added is called Direct Access. And Direct Access is from Nagarsoft, N-A-G-A-R, Soft. And it's kind of a silent application that sits around in the background watching for abbreviations. So if you type like if you're in any application and you're in Word, you type in AMA and then it searches Amazon, and then there's lists and bundles of abbreviations that it can watch for, and it's got a very very clean and fresh UI, and the abbreviations can be used not just for launching stuff, but also of course for expanding. It's almost like autocorrect for all of Windows. It's a lot like ActiveWords. ActiveWords has been around for forever. ActiveWords.com. And it's one of these applications that just is always there in the back watching you type. And then if it sees you type something that is that it can act on, then it will take action. It's really interesting that between all these launchers, they're all just so similar, but they each have a little thing that's just different that makes them worth keeping around. So I'm tortured.
So why not write your own launcher?
You know, it's funny. I've actually started writing my own launcher two or three times. And then realize that the amount of work that every one of these launchers does, even the most simple one does, is really very significant. I mean, you have to go and search through the start menu, program files, decide whether or not you want to interact with the Windows index. You have to keep local storage. You have to run as not admin. You have to have nice transparent effects. You have to have some kind of sense of artistic. Yeah. Once you start writing the requirements, you realize that it's better to work with these guys that are 80% of the way there than for me to start at zero.
Right.
So, not quite there.
So, have you picked a favorite yet?
Oh, man. I still use Slick Run. So, but I know that is very, very largely kind of an emotional thing because Slick Run was like the third or fourth that I started using back in the day. But if they are on the list, I have used them, and they are neat. So, I would encourage people to just pick the one that makes them happy. A lot of people really like Launchy, Launchy.net. That's the one that people keep pushing me towards, mostly the .NET developers. It just won a SourceForge.net Community Choice Award for Best New Project. It's open source, and it is written in C#. So from a .NET developer's perspective, you can't really beat a C# application open source that's getting Community Choice Awards that's loved by Lifehacker and has a plugin model. So Launchy is a real slick one. It's written by a guy named Josh Carlin. So, you know, if you want to start somewhere, maybe start with Launchy and then run around and try the other ones on the list.
Okay.
A couple other, as we wrap up here, a couple others that are really worth noting. Dark Room is under the Stuff I Just Dig section of the list. And Dark Room is a text editor, but it's not a competing text editor for Notepad. It's not one that you're going to necessarily pop up all the time. it basically takes all of your screens, blacks them out, and gives you a nice, clean, dark room, no UI of any kind, and just text. So I give it a nice Kermit green, old-style terminal look.
You know, I've given all of my command, I give my command prompt window that look. I like that look, the old-style
really
terminal.
It's very peaceful.
It is very peaceful.
So when I just want everything to go away, I fire up Darkroom. I've actually got it on a hotkey. And it's kind of the place that I brainstorm, and I also use it for kind of really dramatic note-taking during presentations. Sometimes you've seen those presentations I do without PowerPoint.
Right.
Just me and Notepad. Now it's me and Darkroom. So definitely worth checking out.
So no TextPad?
You know, I just hate TextPad. You know, maybe we'll end on me just despising TextPad with the heat of a thousand suns. I hate this stupid tool. One of the things I hate TextPad about, and I really don't hate TextPad. One of the things that I hate about TextPad is that by default, Control F is not find. It's actually F5. That's just irritating. Now, I know I can remap it, but that doesn't change the fact that it was irritating. I like Notepad++ over TextPad. I also find editing all the different syntax bundles in TextPad to be very tedious. But I know that there are those that worship TextPad. I am just not that guy.
Well,
ooh, here's one.
Enough.
Here's one. Things Windows forgot. The Vista codec package. You might like this. So, you know, you ever find a video that's like you're running around the net and you find a new episode of Seinfeld or whatever, something you shouldn't be downloading, that's in some funky video format that you've never heard of, and they want you to go and download some strange codec to get it to work. That can be dangerous because there are codec viruses, but also they're hard to manage and they're difficult to uninstall. The Vista codec package.
I got a JavaScript error on the page.
Which page?
IE7.
On the Vista codec package?
Vista codec packages, yeah.
When you surf around a crazy set of websites like this that are generated, you know, created by college students or whatever, yeah, you're going to get a million JavaScript pop-ups. Unless you're actively debugging JavaScript, that's the first thing I turn off. I do not need them popping up to telling me that the
how
the
do you
browser,
turn that off in IE7?
Tools, Alt T O for options, advanced, and you want to click display a notification about every script error and turn it to off. It's under the browsing section of tools, options, advanced, settings, browsing. Make sense?
Okay.
All right. Imagine if the system would prompt you every single time an HTML error came up. That would be pretty amazing. Okay, anyway, Vista Codec Package, it's literally just a big old MSI installer with all of the very best non-spyware video codecs to get things like VOB files, you know, the VOB DVD files, ASFs, to get them to play in Media Center, to get them to play in Media Player 11. It's got QuickTime, Real Media, Xvid, DivX, MPEG-2, DirectVOB, all of these different things in one bundle made it really, really easy to get funky video formats playing on Vista. And if you don't have Vista, you want to do like XP, there's a CCCP, the Combined Community Codec Pack, that works on Windows 2000 and Windows XP as well. Very cool stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff on this. I'm just scrolling through here. We could talk for another hour about, and we wouldn't even make it halfway through the list.
Well, that's a pretty good start, I think. And I think that we're just about out of time. And if you want to take a look at all of the other things, you should go up to Hanselman.com. Do you have a Shrinkster link for us?
Right now it's just Hanselman.com/tools. That link will always take you to the latest version. So if you blog about the list or if you pass the list to somebody, just tell them, Hanselman.com/tools. It'll always go to the latest version.
Awesome.
And one thing I want to add, though, as a shameless plug, and as Lawrence said at the beginning, there's a lot of work that I put into these lists. I'm not doing it for anyone but myself, but I do put a great deal of effort into the list. And I would really appreciate it if you really like the list, if you like the show, if you like reading my blog, if you would make a tax-deductible donation to the American Diabetes Association. If you've listened to the show or read the blog for any amount of time, you know that I'm a type 1 diabetic on an insulin pump, and it kind of sucks. And you can read about that at Hanselman.com/fightdiabetes. And I would really encourage people to make a tax-deductible donation. All of it goes directly to diabetes research. It doesn't go to me. If you go to Hanselman.com/fightdiabetes, we're trying to raise $50,000 by October 20th. And so far, we've raised $24,000. So I've got about a month and a half, 2 months. I got to get another 26 grand.
Well, good luck with that. I've donated. Rich Campbell has donated, and a lot of the RDs have as well. So,
yeah, they really have, and I really do appreciate that.
All right. Scott, thanks as always. It's been a great show, and I always enjoy reading your tool list. And it always takes a whole bunch of time away from my regular life to investigate all these tools, but it's so worth it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.